unbelievable.
Welcome to the game.
It's a beautiful thing.
With Mark Duffy.
By golly gosh.
The son of a darkened shearer and a self-described ball-playing jack-of-all-trades.
We shouldn't be surprised, should we?
Who lit up footy fields in the southwest before becoming WA's preeminent AFL scrum.
My goodness.
And Glenn Quarterman.
Wow-wee.
A proud Victorian parked permanently in the west who would have played 300 AFL games if not for his incredibly small hands.
Goodness gracious me.
Together they are Duff and Quarters.
You know who.
And this is your favourite footy podcast.
It's unbelievable.
Yes, hello everybody. It is Thursday. It is time for the Duff and Quarters podcast. We are brought to you by Tab Touch. Those with the touch, you can better your bet and download the Tab Touch app today. Please gamble responsibly and please call Gambler's Help on 1-800-858-858 if you encounter any difficulties. We now pause for a moment of sadness.
Duff, I've got some very sad news. Had some correspondence overnight from our friends Greg and Katie in Kentucky. I'm quite moved. I'm quite shaken. I'm very, very sad. Quarters, the barn cat, is gone.
How so, Glenn?
He's gone to that great cattery in the sky over the Rainbow Bridge, Duff. We all know Greg and Katie have named their farm Fremantle Farm. They've got lots of animals there, Schultzy the dog. Duff and Quarters were our beloved favourite creatures on that farm. They were the two barn cats. Admittedly, they laid around doing nothing. Didn't catch mice. Just screeched for food whenever they walked past. Well, outside that barn, and I'm not making this up. It's symbolic in my life, but I'm not making this up. Outside that barn sits a giant hawk. Sits on a post just waiting for things to scurry past so it can leap on them. Quarters got curious, wandered outside the barn, and he's gone, Duff. The hawk took him. Quarters was taken by a hawk. Do you see the irony in this?
I do, Glenn, yes.
And I'm not making this
up. It's pretty
obvious,
the irony.
It's actually happened.
Yep.
Now, I don't want to get into grim detail. I did Google what hawks do with their prey, and let's just hope it was quick. So let's just spare a moment for poor little Quarters. And don't spare too long thinking about Duff. I asked how Duff the barn cat was. He's fine. He's happy as Larry, I'm told.
More food for him.
He's, yeah, he's just screeching for food. Don't worry about Quarters. He'll come back if he doesn't. Happy days.
Of course, the great cattery in the sky is probably just the next step along from Cadinia Park, given the age of their playing list. The other thing I was observed, this is inevitable when cat with very small hands meets bird with very large hands.
It does.
Apparently they just...
Hang on a sec. I'm just choking up. I'll just take a moment, please.
Apparently they just crush them with their claws. Sorry to add that. I would be nothing
without you. Valet Quarters, the barn cat. You lived a good life. Anyway, we better pick some winners.
Yes, we better. We better get onto that. Sad about Quarters, very sorry Quarters, but such is life in nature.
It's the circle of life,
it
unfortunately.
Is the circle of life, yes. Okay, so what's news today?
News today, Collingwood have announced that Dugowie and Darcy Moore, who were troubled by soreness, we know Dugowie with the shoulder, they're going to play. So they will play against Fremantle. Fremantle, as we speak, preparing to jump on the bus down at Coburn and make their way to the airport. We expect them to be an unchanged side. Would you agree with that?
Yep.
We expect Tabata to remain in Perth.
I think so.
And play in the waffle.
And play in the waffle. Yes.
We expect Nat Fyfe to travel, be in the coach's box. At best, he will play next week, but that's even a stretch, we're told.
Yeah, I would be thinking that Nathan Fyfe wouldn't play unless they somehow got through to the grand final.
Okay.
With that history of hamstrings now this year and also just the lack of work. They'd want to put, you know, be able to put some sort of body of work into him before they put him out there again in any game, let alone a final. So, yeah, interesting. Do you reckon Fremantle have made them aware of which shoulder it is?
Oh, yeah. Just as Brisbane will be fully aware which leg Christian Petrarca is sore in.
Yeah.
Which is part of the game.
Yeah, if you go out there. If you go out there, you're fit.
That's right. So the other news this morning, well, it's happened over the last 48 hours, but some interesting conversation about Ross Lyon withdrawing from the Essendon race, if he was ever in it. Was the vibe of the thing, he said. Yeah, didn't like the vibe. Let's just call it, I didn't like going through the process, which is part of it too. But you know what? The way Essendon's travelling at the moment, I wouldn't blame him. And it leaves really only one experienced coach. Brad Scott has said, I'm not interested, which is Leon Cameron.
Well, there's two, isn't there? I mean, there will be forces at Essendon who will be trying to bring James Hurd back. I don't think there's any doubt about that. And it's going to be interesting to see how that pans out. Leon Cameron, interesting how Brad Scott very quickly knocked it on the head. What would the pay rate be for, say, a senior coach at a power club like Essendon compared to the general manager of football operations?
What would be on there? I don't know. I've no idea what it'd be on at the AFL, but I would say
close to eight.
Oh, well, it'd be probably around that market, isn't it?
So it's probably comparable pay. Mm. It may be
slightly less stressful where he is, although it would have its moments.
Yeah, I think it would have. It would have had its moments in the days following the Brisbane Richmond game.
It's interesting you see coaches who've stepped out a year or two. Brad's got a little longer than that, but it's a highly stressful job, very well remunerated job, but a highly stressful job. And you step away for a couple of years, you do something else, and it's like, this ain't too bad. Yeah. I don't really miss it that much because it is a churning treadmill for them, and it's a long year. Footy's a long year, and it will be interesting to see where that Essendon job goes now.
Now, Richmond's, as I tweeted the other night, it was very well received on Twitter. Richmond appears to have turned its complaining about the arc into a test match, not an ODI or a T20.
Oh, yeah, and it's still going. Yeah, I did see Jack Rewalk, was it last night or the night before, still going on about, are you over it yet, Jack? Oh, I'm still a bit grumbly about it.
Well, following on from Damien Hardwick the previous night.
Yeah, it's a super test. As they used to have in World Series cricket.
Might be a timeless test.
It's a timeless test. Yes, this is.
Remember that one they had to end because the players had to get on the boat?
Yeah. I do.
Back in the 1930s? Yeah. You know, well, we don't remember it. Well, here's we know of it.
Free advice to Richmond. It's time to move on. And also, it's not all about you.
They need the Esperance advice, which is a piece of advice I picked up when I used to holiday in Esperance regularly, when my wife and I used to go down. And it was uttered often to people who didn't come from Esperance, who found the camping and stuff a bit rugged down there. Just get a teaspoonful of cement and sprinkle it over your Wheaties in the morning and harden the you-know-what. So, yeah, look, a bit of further advice for Richmond, just cut the outrage. By all means, express concern about the process. That's okay. But to be outraged, you've got to think he kicked the goal. Not that the umpire thought it was a goal, but you've got to think he kicked the goal. Tom Lynch didn't think he kicked the goal. All the Brisbane players under the post didn't think he kicked the goal. There's enough evidence on video to suggest he didn't kick the goal. So let's just spare us the outrage, please. Most of us think he didn't kick the goal. So get over that. If we can get a better process where this is concerned, that's great. But the other thing about this to remember, if you don't think the evidence is conclusive, don't forget that 99% in is out for this. If it's even going to graze the post, if the post is a metre taller, it's a point. So just remember that. And if you think of that, it's a lot easier to get to the conclusion that there was conclusive evidence that it was a point.
Some other news breaking this morning, just keeps getting better for the Sydney Swans. Tommy and Paddy McCartan re-signed. Tom for 4 years, Paddy for 2 years.
Joint contract? So like a Siamese contract?
No, 4 and 2 years.
Wow, so 4 for Tom, 2 for Paddy.
Which is probably fair.
Yep.
I'm really pleased for Paddy. We saw those signs of him, images of him earlier this year, wasn't it, when he was in the rooms and we feared that he'd suffer another heavy concussion. But to find his way back and to be an integral part of that and now in a preliminary final and very much short price to progress to a grand final, it's a great footy story and I'm really pleased for him. And I'm really pleased to see Sydney have another success.
It's a great footy yarn, isn't it? And, gee, haven't there been some good ones this year? You got Sam Doherty.
Sam Doherty, great story.
Back from cancer at Carlton, had a great year. Ben Cunnington getting back from his second bout of testicular cancer to play at the end of the season. You've got Chol and Casbolt going to the Gold Coast and reinventing their AFL careers. You've got Paddy McCartan in Sydney. Even someone like Will Brody at Fremantle, basically a set of steak knives in a trade, and becomes a critical element in the Fremantle midfield. So, yeah, football throws up a lot of great stories, and we've had more than our share of them this year.
Mm. Even Gary Rowan last weekend, you know, he's had his knockers over his finals performances, and rightly so, given his performances, but just to step up, it keeps giving this season.
So, quarters, we do have a lot of mail.
We do. So let's get some tips.
Let's get into the tipping, and we've only got two games to attend to, and then we'll get on with the mail. So we have on Friday night at the MCG, Dane Zorko versus Melbourne. No, yes. not quite Dane Zorko versus Melbourne.
Well, it'll be Dane Zorko versus the Melbourne supporters.
Yes, correct.
And perhaps a little bit going on out there, although I think they've probably been advised to step back from that, but it won't stop the fans.
No. So Melbourne versus Brisbane, $1.34 Melbourne, $3.25 Brisbane. Can you make a case for the Lions?
I can. I'm not going to, because I'm going to pick Melbourne to win this. I fear very comfortably too. That's my fear. They had their win last week. 11 games in a row at the G?
That they've lost?
Yeah. Well, it's around 2015, the last time they won at the MCG.
Yeah.
So it's a big monkey. They were miles ahead, 40 points ahead of Richmond?
Yep.
And managed to lose that. Of course, all these runs will be broken, so it's going to end at some point. I think they have to – Brisbane needs to get more out of their forward line. They need to get Lachie Neale free of a tag. So Melbourne will address that. Melbourne have to tag Lachie Neale here. Because if they do, and they do it successfully, I can't see Brisbane winning. So two things need to happen here for Brisbane to win. Lachie Neale needs to get free, and that forward line needs to show us a bit more. And I'm talking Joe Danaher. Yes, it was a great – you did kick the winning goal last week, but, you know, it was a little bit of a – it wasn't a four-quarter performance by any stretch of the imagination. Joe Danaher needs to do – he needs to do what he did in the last quarter for four quarters, just have an impact at the contest and halve it and bring the footy to ground. So if he can do that, and players like Cam Rayner, who's a bit of an X factor, can get involved, then I think Brisbane can win. Melbourne, the big question mark's about Petrarca. He's got that hairline fracture of the leg. He's going to play. I expect him to play as a permanent forward, not as a midfielder.
Isn't that basically an admission that he's not fit?
Yes, but he still plays.
So why is he playing in a final?
Well, I'd probably err against that, but they know him better than I do. So I think that's what's going to happen. What do they do? Do they tag? Well, Brisbane needs to tag Clayton Oliver. So does Devon Robinson go to him?
Devon Robinson, I think, definitely plays and definitely goes to Clayton Oliver. If I was Chris Fagan, you know what I'd be really tempted to do? I think either Angus Brayshaw will go to Lachie Neale and play on him around stoppage and then maybe release.
Harms?
Or James Harms will go with him. And if James Harms goes with him, he'll probably go.
Well, Harms has done the job in the past.
So if I was Brisbane, I'd be really, really tempted to send Lachie Neale to Clayton Oliver.
Yeah, it's a good move.
And just say, you know, here we go, head to head. This is not, you know, Patrick Dangerfield, Nathan Fyfe style in Adelaide all those years ago back in 2015. Just say, Lachie, you go to him and you win this battle and we go a long way to winning this game. And just, you know, Lachie stood up for Brisbane last week like there was no tomorrow. And he was absolutely fantastic. Challenge him with that. If Melbourne try and turn that into a tag on Lachie to free up Clayton Oliver, then that's great because it means a two-on-one there and it means a free Brisbane player somewhere else. Which I think works in Brisbane's favour. I think Brisbane only gets in this game is if the other members of their midfielders really stand up. So that's Hugh McCluggage has to have the game of his life. Zach Bailey has to go in there and have the game of his life. Zorko has to take his turn through there and play the game of his life. They do all that and they create the opportunities for their for their forwards. I think they have the forwards that can kick a score.
Yeah, they do have the forwards, but will they kick it? I mean, McStay, Danaher, we talked about Cam Rayner earlier. At the other end is what worries me, re Melbourne. I mean, they were that inside 50 entry, and as you wrote last week, you had three going up at the same,
every contest.
Yeah, Brown. So
The Fremantle supporters were gnashing their teeth about the lack of impact by Luke Jackson. Obviously, they think he's coming to Fremantle, and that won't be confirmed until the end of the season.
But Jackson needs to have a game because they
need. But Quarters, he's not going to have a game if the big element that he needs is forward 50 impact, and he's flying against Max Gawn and Ben Brown.
No, he needs to have a game in the ruck.
Yeah.
Because we need Gawn to be able to slide forward and have an impact there. But we need that forward line to keep out of each other's way, number one, and number which allows those small forwards to get to work. So what happens with Pickett? Who does Stasevic go to?
If I'm Brisbane, Stasevic goes to Pickett. Stasevic is an outstanding small defender. I think he'll end up in the midfield at some stage.
And we were just talking off air, would be a good future captain.
Yeah, he's a magnificent player.
Good Mount Lawley Inglewood boy too.
Yes.
He's a Roo boy.
Yes. Very, very good player. Remember Peter Sumich saying when he
was
drafted, he said, this kid's as good as Cam Rayner. And, of course, Cam Rayner was the number one draft pick that season. Now, I suspect Cam Rayner may get to a level beyond where Brandon Stasevic can get to if he keeps on that incremental improvement that he's showing. But right now, Brandon Stasevic is as good as Cam Rayner. So far, Peter Sumich is not a bad call.
So the Melbourne defenders, Joe Danaher, Stephen May?
Yep.
Hipwood and McStay.
Petty and Lever between them.
Yeah.
Not necessarily a firm matchup. Basically, they'll want Lever getting to where he can best intercept, and Petty is just such a great adaptable
player. Who would his best player be early if he wants to intercept? Just depends how they've struck. It doesn't really matter, does it? They just need to structure the defence so that he can get free.
McStay's probably more of that post-up forward, whereas Hipwood's the one that gets on the fly.
Yeah.
I'd probably be sending Petty to McStay and then trying to get Lever to get Hipwood into positions where he's not dangerous, and then Lever can make his own arrangements from there. That's probably what these guys read the play so well and read the cue so well. They know where the ball's going, and if it's not going where their man is, they just ignore their man. So I think there'll be a bit of that unless Hipwood can position himself really cleverly. We're assuming Darcy Fort plays. I think he has to, given...
Well, McInerney is concussed, I think, so he's not playing.
Yeah, but there was a suggestion that maybe, given that the loss of Oscar McInerney didn't hurt them last week, whether they would...
Stick with McStay, yeah.
I just can't see that happening.
No, Gawn and Jackson. You need to bring him in. Darcy Ford. And I think Fagan flagged that straight after the game when he said, I congratulated my recruiting manager for getting Darcy Ford to the club because we're going to need him next week. He plays.
So, and the other thing, like talking about others other than Lachie Neale having to step up for Brisbane in this one, I just get the feeling that rain is about to pop. And this is the game for him to pop in. He was suspended last week. He was, it was a dangerous tackle that was half dangerous. I think he was probably a tad unlucky, but I understand the point you always make about, protect the head. So he missed his week. Answorth is back in well as a small defender. So that's another option for Cozzy Pickett if they want to position Stasevic a little bit more aggressively. I'm tipping Melbourne wins this by 5 goals, Quarters.
Yeah, I think I'm around about the same mark, actually. But I fear worse.
Yeah, I think Brisbane will give a yelp here. I think the feeling at Brisbane is that they needed to get a finals win to get the monkey off the back, and that they may get some belief out of that.
There's a second monkey to shake, though, which is the MCG.
MCG, yeah, but maybe a good time to shake it. Melbourne, 4 or 5 goals, I think, and they go onwards and upwards. Collingwood versus Fremantle, MCG Saturday night. Collingwood $1.50. Fremantle $2.60. Isn't it amazing the difference a point makes? If Carlton kicks that extra point and draws that game and plays finals, Fremantle makes the qualifying final. Now, let's say that Geelong beats them. Collingwood plays in the elimination final against the Doggies. Let's say they beat them. This game's in Perth, and we've probably got Fremantle as the favourites.
Well, not only that, let's call it what a difference 6 points makes, because there's an L next to Collingwood last week and they really didn't deserve it. There should be a W.
They were fantastic.
So they lost to Collingwood by Geelong by 6 points. they would be in a preliminary final. So for me, that was a double. That was an L with an asterisk.
So they've almost lost a final and gained admirers.
They have, but this pressure goes on because there's always that spectre of straight sets when you go in with a double chance, which is there. And they may say, no, I'm not worried about that, but that is, it's there. And it is more doubly so when you're a big club like Collingwood. Having said that, on form, they did nothing wrong last week except win the game. And so for me, they go in as favourites, and I am tipping them. I think Freo, though, it's, I wouldn't even call them a silly chance. They're more than that. On the proviso, they've come from behind against GWS. They've come from behind against the Dogs. If they want to come from behind this week, then they're kidding themselves. They will not beat Collingwood, I can guarantee. What is it? What is it about these starts by Freo? Now, we know it's a interesting dynamic in the dressing room. Some players are a bit up and about. Some players like to sit in the corner and get very nervous and just keep to themselves. And I'm sure Justin Longmuir and his great assistant coaches, his great team he's assembled there, are all over this. But what do they do to get this team up and about early to neutralise the 90,000 predominantly Collingwood supporters?
Predominantly?
Yeah. Well, or
overwhelmingly.
Overwhelmingly.
So it's probably going to be 80-10.
Yeah. So my point is, you'll take the crowd out of it if you come off to a reasonably good stiff, you jump them. But it's going to be a hard slog. It's going to be a great experience for them. They've got the final under their belt. They've got the win. They've got the belief they can win from way behind. But let's not try and execute that, please. I think, you know, it very much comes down to the midfield. But then I think Fremantle, second best defence statistically in the comp. We know it's a great back six or back eight. We know what they're capable of. But they can't allow easy ball into that defence because we saw what happened early last week against the Dogs, and I just worried about that Fremantle forward line still.
So the slow starts, I'm not worried, and I'll tell you why I'm not worried. I think there's two factors, and they're two very different factors in the slow starts. The slow start against GWS, I think, whenever a team from Perth goes east, whether it be West Coast or Fremantle, and they play a game that starts at a time that has 11 in front of it in WA time, no matter how much you try and adjust your body clocks and how much you adjust your body biorhythms, our teams do not get up and going until at some point after 12. So I think that's a factor in the game against GWS. Once 12:30 rolled around, lo and behold, Freo, having conceded 7 of the first 9, kick 11 the next 14, dominate the game, win. Last week, your classic case of freezing in the moment and getting stage fright. I've got no doubt about it. They were nervous. They were tight. They played accordingly. They played too careful. They weren't good enough in the contest. Most of all, they just did not execute basic skills well enough. And that's what ended up conceding the first 6 goals. After that, they came storming back, kick, 11 of the next 13? And they win the game. So I think the start will be okay, but I do agree with you, the forward line.
Where do they get the goals from? So let's just say Darcy Moore goes to lob.
He does, yeah.
Okay, so it's going to be a really tough day for lob. So it brings Amos into the equation. It brings the small forwards into the equation. So they're going to have to find the goals. Now, they found them last week, but they're going to have to find a way here through this. It's going to be tough.
Yeah. Fremantle needs this to be a 12-goal game, 12 to 13 goals. If it's a 12 to 13 goal game, a sort of like about the winner kicks 80 points sort of game, I think Fremantle is in this game. If it's a 15 to 16 goal game, I think Collingwood's winning this by 3 or 4 goals.
Yeah. Bit of speed about Freo.
Yeah, but same about Collingwood.
I know they're the same, but This is a really quick team, and not only by foot, but by hand, you know, and by eye. I just like the way Freo go about it. Who gets Sonny Walters?
Oh, I think Braden Maynard is the first choice defender to play on Sonny Walters, and it's really important that Sonny is dangerous because Braden Maynard, with Taylor Adams injured, they will want him to go into some centre bounces.
He'll be dangerous. He'll be dangerous without questions whether he can execute, because last week he was both. He was dangerous early but couldn't execute. Once he executed, one of the great performances by Sonny I've seen for some time.
Yeah, he's in good nick. And he has been for about 2 months now, I reckon. He's been gradually building and gathering form and momentum. So I'm a bit up and about what Michael Walters can do in this game. But if he can really be a threat, I think, and if Collingwood have to not only play Maynard on him, but play Maynard deep on him, then that takes a bit away from Collingwood. The other thing I reckon they've got to get right is how they try and manipulate a matchup where Sam Switkowski gets to Nick Dacos. Now, the reason I say that is two things. Switkowski will have the chase down speed to threaten him when Dacos has the ball in hand. He will put a lot of pressure on him. He plays with a lot of intensity. But the other thing about Sam Switkowski, he's a seriously smart player. When he has the opportunity to be dangerous going the other way, he won't be completely defensive, and he will get out and get dangerous and make Nick Dacos accountable. I think Dacos is a massive key to Collingwood. Fremantle have to win the stoppages. This is where Collingwood are vulnerable. Sean Darcy has to get really physical with Darcy Cameron and Mason Cox, has to crash in hard. Brayshaw, Brody, Sarong, they have to be really clean at stoppage, same with David Mundy. They have to get rolling in there, get on top there, and then it's a matter of, you know what, this is Rory Lobb's biggest game in his time at Fremantle, and Rory Lobb could come out of this with one goal and play one of the best games he's ever played for Fremantle, as long as he just doesn't let Darcy Moore take the game over. Darcy Moore's in ripping nick.
Yeah, all he has to do is halve the contest with Darcy Moore and maybe jag a goal or
maybe catch a couple.
Yeah, catch a couple, jag one or two.
But don't let Moore bring his own ball back there. And if he does that, he will play a huge role in Fremantle being in this game up to their eyeballs.
Prediction, I'm going to say Collingwood by 18 points.
I'm going to say Collingwood by 10 points. I think Fremantle can keep this reasonably low scoring and reasonably close. I think it's hard to tip Collingwood given the momentum they've built. Don't forget, though, come from behind wins give you great belief and great momentum. Freo's got two in as many games. Mm. Don't forget the wins give you great confidence and momentum. Freo's got four on the trot now.
And wins in finals.
Yeah. And two of those wins are against a top eight team.
Mm.
So don't write Fremantle off by any stretch of the imagination in this.
Now, before we get to the mailbag, we have a subscriber sports pack offer at the West Australian. It's a 30% discount, which it offer ends on September 24. It'll only cost you 70 cents a day, Duff. That's $4.90 per week. You get the latest in AFL footy finals, AFLW, basketball, A-League and cricket, including exclusive commentary for columnists such as Justin Langer and Mark Duffield, of course. Everything sports straight to your device. Sign up to the West Australian. It's a limited time offer. Visit thewest.com.au/everydaysport. And now it's time for this.
Saddle up your camel. It's time for the Thirsty Camel mailbag.
Yes.
Bumper edition of the mailbag today.
Bumper edition. We are chockers. Thank you to Thirsty Camel. Thank you to Green Coast Lager from Stone and Wood Brewery. We'll be giving away a carton. Of course, we have a clubhouse leader from Tuesday. It's one of our favourites. It's Brett the Iron Ore Dozer Operator, who sent in that fantastic email about buyer beware, some of the best trades are the ones you don't do. So let's get stuck into this week's. Firstly, from Joel. Dual standards at play. Why not charge? Simply wrong. Switkowski got a stretch for the same thing. Of course, he's talking about Ginnivan's chicken wing tackle on Patrick Dangerfield. We know Patrick Dangerfield was distressed by it. He went to the Geelong bench, told them he thought he was going to have his arm dislocated, but had no case to answer. Switkowski went for the same tackle, ironically, on Ginnivan. Is he lucky to be playing this week?
Yes, he is. And the reality is they just missed it. And by the time they realised it had happened, they...
How do you miss that? Seriously. We pour over everything in this industry.
I know. But I wasn't aware of it until Monday night. I think Mark Robinson mentioned it on Foxtel on Monday night on their show.
I bet you Collingwood would have been happy they missed it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if they pick that up in the match review, he's not playing this week. Simple as that.
Wow.
So that's a big miss. The other thing that could have happened, if Geelong really wanted to be picky about it, which clubs sometimes do, in their medical report they could have made a mention of it and said, we believe he was chicken winged. And then the AFL would have investigated it and they probably would have taken Ginnivan out. Imagine the bloody martyr syndrome that would have applied to Jack Ginnivan then. Mm. It would have been because they're already trying to claim that he gets umpired differently and this and that. He's brought it all on himself.
He has.
So have they. They should all get over it. In fact, it's gone beyond just getting over it. Someone at Collingwood needs to sit down and talk to Jack Ginnivan about the way he plays and about the way he goes about it. And then Collingwood needs to shut up and basically accept the fact that this guy milks free kicks, which means the umpire is entitled every time he's near the ball about to be tackled to assume that he's trying to milk the free kick, and bear that in mind when they assess whether it's a free kick or not. And they did it with Joel Selwood last week, quarters. Joel Selwood tried to shrug three and only got one of them. The other two were play on. Probably should have been pinged for holding the ball. Michael Walters doesn't get high contact frees anymore because they know he tries to milk them. So Jack Ginnivan is not a unique case. And he did dive. And had they picked that up in the match review, he wouldn't be playing this week.
This one from Dan, yes, based in the beautiful city of Perth. Thanks for your fantastic pod. This has irked me for a few years, but Frio's recent success has renewed said irking. Watching on the couch last week, Nick Riewoldt made a comment about Frio's Brayshaw and Sarong, saying something like, we don't know too much about these guys over here in the East, but we know they're going to be superstars. Why? Why don't the Eastern States media know too much about the stars of the West? Both of you, as WA-based football journalists, do an excellent job in knowing more than most about pretty much every player on every team. So if you guys can do it with ease, why can't these high-profile Eastern States commentators do the same? Imagine an NBA commentator based in New York saying on air that they didn't know much about an up-and-comer from the Lakers. They wouldn't, or they'd arguably be at risk of losing their job. I won't go on. That I think we've got the essence of that. That's a good email.
Yeah, it is a good email. It is very annoying for a lot of West Australian people. What I would say is that Nick Riewoldt, I mean, he's obviously just said that as a figure of speech. Yeah. From what I can see, Nick Riewoldt is a bloke who does his homework and watches a lot of footy and is very learned when it comes about how various teams play. But it's not the first time that you hear that said about a WA player and you go, what, haven't you got a TV? Because that's how we watch most of our footy now. We watch it on the TV and you pay attention and you pay attention to those shows over there and you learn a lot and you become very aware of what's going on.
Julian from WA writes, g'day fellas, with the AFL trade period upon us, it got me thinking, why doesn't the AFL allow loan players to other clubs? There are many benefits for this. For example, relieving some salary cap pressure for a year, fast-tracking the development of younger players and accessing players that your club needs. For example, Lloyd Meek could have been loaned out to Geelong as they need a decent first-choice ruckman. Frio in exchange could loan out out-of-favour key forward, Radaglia. I'm sure there are many much better examples, but this is the only one I could think of at the time. Nearly all other professional sports do this. Surely the AFL is heading down this path soon. I'm not sure about soon. I couldn't see it working.
So they used to have a lease. I remember.
Did they?
Yeah. So there was, you used to be able to lease a player. So Graham Schultz from Essendon came to, I think it was Claremont in the, or Subiaco, one of those two clubs in the 1970s. On a lease arrangement.
But that's not in the same comp. They're
no.
Talking about releasing them in the same comp.
I know. But I'm saying there was a process. I don't know. Part of the challenge is developing your list, isn't it? I'll tell you where it should apply. It should apply in the Waffle.
Yeah.
We have this joke situation in the Waffle where the other clubs have made it very difficult for West Coast to build a decent list and a competitive list, and then they go na-na-na-na-na when they belt West Coast.
So you loan players into West Coast side?
I think so. Yeah. Like basically every club develop a protected list of 30 players every year, ones that there's no way you're letting go under any circumstances, and say to West Coast, we will let you loan, and let's say every club three. West Coast can have a crack at three.
It's got to be for the year, though. It can't be from week to week.
That's right, yeah. Maybe review it halfway through the year. Maybe have like a mid-season reallocation.
Interesting how we, in the NRL, we have the situation where you can, I'm going to Club X next year, and you know about it for half a year.
Yeah.
It doesn't happen in the AFL officially. For example, all the talk's been for 6 months now that Luke Jackson's coming to Frio. But will we ever get to the point where AFL, where you just announce next year I'm going to Club X, and we know halfway through.
Incidentally, on that, obviously we've had the Junior Rioli stuff over the last couple of days. Strong talk in recent days that Griffin Logue has knocked back the latest contract offer from Fremantle, which means I'm not saying he is going, but they have to consider he's now at serious risk of...
Which is a worry for Freo because, as we've discussed, maybe their most important keep.
Well, he is of the out-of-contract one. Mm. I wouldn't say he's their most important
keep. No, out of the out-of-contract.
Yeah, certainly they'd much rather keep Griffin Logue than lose him. But they've got a four times $500,000 offer on the table for Griffin Logue. We believe that North Melbourne's come very hard and very high. So the initial view of North Melbourne, and I got this from someone who talks to North Melbourne regularly, was that they didn't think Griffin Logue really wanted to come and that basically that they may have been used as a pawn in the contract negotiation. In the last week, I get the feeling they think they're a chance to get him. And he certainly hasn't said no to North Melbourne yet.
Interesting email here, Duff. Requires a little bit of thinking on the spot. Regards from Rob. Hi, guys. Rob from Canning Vale. Thanks for the pods. Always enjoy listening to your insightful comments and love the passion. As you both have played footy in the years gone by, which current AFL players would you say you both resemble or think you resembled? Well, Duff, it's a little self-indulgent, and I was a battler at best, but... I was nicknamed after Bob Skilton, the triple Brownlow medalist.
The chimp.
The chimp, as a junior. So I'm going to go with Skilts, the triple Brownlow medalist.
Well, I'm going to tell a self-deprecating story about myself, and this is the closest I've come to any comparison to an AFL player. I arrived at South Bunbury in 1982. Leon Baker left at the end of 1980 and went to Swan Districts. And Leon Baker was a legend at South Bunbury, played in premierships, was I think he won a Pike medal as the best player on the ground in a grand final. We played an elimination final in my first season there in 82. We played Harvey Brunswick in the rain. I took a really good mark, 15 metres out from goal, and shanked the kick, scraped through for a point. We lost by 2 points.
Where were you on the ground at the top of the square?
I was 15 metres out, and I was a good kick.
So what happened?
Did you get the
wobbly legs or you just shanked it?
No, it was slippery. The ball just – I didn't quite nail the ball drop and it hit slightly off centre and it slid. I was really chuffed with the mark and really disappointed with the kick. As I was walking off the ground, I was walking down the players' race and the board members at South Bunbury, we used to call them red coats because they always used to turn up with their red coats on. One of them leaned over the balcony and yelled out, "You know bloody Leon Baker, Duffield." So that's as close as I've come to being compared to an AFL-VFL player, Quarters.
Wow. Wow. This one from – actually, just on that, with that kick, do you remember James Manson, the Collingwood ruckman?
Yes.
Good player, terrible kick.
Yeah. Ronnie McEwen.
I reckon late in the game, maybe inside 20 seconds to go, and he's taken the mark – straight in front, about 20 metres out, might have been against Fitzroy, in a mud heap, and he's kicked the footy. He's actually kicked the turf, and the foot's come through, connected with the football. As the football's risen, all the mud and turf that he's kicked has come up with it, and it's the greatest floater you've ever seen, and just got beyond outstretched hands for a goal. We were all laughing watching this replay at the time.
Well, the Jimmy Manson moment I remember is the one where he took the mark on the boundary in the pocket and faked being winded. Reckoned he couldn't take the kick. Lay up against the fence. Ronnie McEwen, who was a dead-eyed dick, came in, kicked the goal, and then Jimmy Manson got up and ran off.
I think there have been a few examples of that in recent times.
Probably.
I think... Dave Mundy might have been involved in one of them.
Probably Jordan Dawson in the showdown this year.
Yeah. Okay, boys, Ben from Geraldton here. Love the pod. After last weekend's performance, was thinking about the Lachie Neale trade request. Although I wouldn't have done it at the time, but right now I can't help thinking if he was on the team, we would be serious contenders. With hindsight being 2020, would you guys have done anything different? I've also attached an interesting form on the ladder I found related to the membership you were talking about on Tuesday. I'll just go through that quickly. It's actually from the Useless AFL Stats website. It's attendance v membership ladder. And as you pointed out, was probably going to be the case. Fremantle 56,000 members, 40,000 average attendance, which gives them a 72% attendance record. And it's interesting to see some of the teams on that list. Brisbane's actually second with 59%, not surprising, and Melbourne's up there too. West Coast is 15th, 102,000 members, 35%. Probably a bit of a reflection in there waiting on the wings.
Probably also for them, they had games earlier in the season that were COVID affected, so therefore they had reduced crowds. Obviously, they have had an absolute stinker of a year, and the fact that their membership is so high means that even if they were having a great year and their average attendance was about, let's say, it's north of 50, which would be a great result,
That'd
still only be a 50% members showing up. So, but what I reckon, what we can say, and there's a lot of argy-bargy between West Coast and Fremantle fans about this on Twitter, and what we can say about both our clubs is that both our clubs have a core of supporters that A, stick fat, and B, turn up. And I think Fremantle supporters prove that in their 6 years without finals between 2015 and this season, and I think West Coast supporters still by the end of the season were getting that 35,000-40,000 people who went every game no matter how bad the team was going.
As for Lachie Neale, Fremantle's doing okay.
Yeah, look, I mean, how do you do that trade? You know, like Brisbane, having invested so much in Lachie Neale, were going to want to exact a high price for him to come home. He's only got probably a couple of good years left. It's not a good list management decision for Fremantle.
Also, there are the six remaining teams, and their midfield's going okay.
Yep.
Hi, Duff and Quarters. This is from Dwight from Wagen. Hi, Duff and Quarters. With the new $4.5 billion TV deal, do you think commentators will go back to calling games live at the grounds? Something seems off whenever commentators are calling the game from a TV screen instead of live at the ground. I'd love to see local commentators who know the names and backstories of local players and clubs be given more screen time. I'd also love more after-game commentary and interviews with players, including stat breakdowns after the games, instead of going straight to some of the terrible after-game football shows we are subjected to these days, when we are lucky if we get to see the team sing the song, and that's it. Love the podcast. Of course, he's not referring to the game on which you appear every week, Duff. No, not at all.
You're assuming.
No.
We're hoping.
Pat ourselves on the back about Seven West about the $4.5 billion TV deal. I think the calling off the TV, and it always, I have great respect for people who can do that because it's very tough. You don't get the positioning behind play. You don't get any of that. So they do a pretty good job of that. That was very much a part COVID. Of COVID.
Yeah.
So I think we will get back to more of it. And
don't forget, too, if they spent more money on buying the rights, they might have less money to actually do the broadcast. So, I don't know. I think COVID showed us a lot of things could be done that we had assumed couldn't be done because, as Gillon McLachlan told us repeatedly, you know, we all have to be flexible and agile. You found that some things that you thought weren't possible actually are possible. So, I think the coverage of footy is pretty good. And I think, you know what, I don't mind a bit of giggling after the game. So the Fox programs like Bounce and Best on Ground and those shows.
Yeah, they have their part. They play their role.
I think the Front Bar is the best footy comedy show by a mile, because they get comedians to do the comedy. But I think those shows have their place. Once you've watched the game, to have a lighter take on it rather than analyse it breathtakingly, you know, for the next 2 hours to within an inch of its life, we've got the next 24 hours, next 48 hours to do that, as we do. We do it in the paper. We do it in this podcast to a degree. There are shows over East that do it as well. I don't have any great problem with the way it's done.
Hi, Duff and Quarters. I have a suggested trade for Junior Rioli. How about we trade Rioli and Port Adelaide's second-round pick back to them in exchange for Port Adelaide's first-round pick? Since they lack any worthwhile picks in the 20s, that may satisfy both sides. That was from James Brown from Samson.
James Brown. I feel good.
Yes.
All right. So I think Port Adelaide's first-round pick will go to get Josh Dunkley. So let's take that one out of play. But we do think that Carl Amon is heading to Hawthorn, And we think that the free agency compensation for that will be a pick somewhere in the 20s. That looms as a pick which is about right for Junior Rioli. West Coast, no doubt, will try and play hardball on this, but I suspect that at the end of the day, if that's the pick they end up getting for Junior Rioli, that will be okay for them. And if you stop and think about it for a minute from a West Coast perspective, I reckon this enables West Coast to be a bit creative in the way they draft. So I saw a draft prospects list yesterday, and the top five in that draft prospects list is Will Ashcroft, who's the
going to Brisbane.
So he'll be pick one. Everyone else will get bumped down one.
Under the father son. Yeah.
There's a guy called Harry Sheezel, who's a
Sheezel.
Yep. Cheezel. Mm. So he's a sort of like an explosive match-winning type. Not a really big guy.
But
he's a Victorian in the junior system over there. There's a guy called Sartas. Again, another Victorian kid. There's a guy called George Wardlaw, who's probably the best player in the draft potentially, but has had some hamstring issues this year. So it'll be a case of whether that frightens people off. And there's a guy called Aaron Cadman. Now, Aaron Cadman will ring a bell to a lot of our listeners because we believe that West Coast has been keeping a very close eye on Aaron Cadman. He's a key position player, 194 centimetre tall forward. He's viewed as an outstanding leader. Like one of the recruiters who's not linked to West Coast, is linked to one of the East Coast clubs, told me the other day, he's a guy you bring to your club and eventually he captains the club. So he's very highly rated. To me, if West Coast were to get four picks inside 30, which the Rioli trade to Port Adelaide would enable them to do if the Amon compensation pick is right, they can take the first pick on Cadman and get the best key position player in this draft and then take three picks trying to add speed to their midfield. And if you stop and think about what that gives them, they've still got Jack Darling and Oscar Allen to play as tall forwards next year. They've got Bailey Williams who plays forward ruck. And they've got Tom Barras, Jeremy McGovern, Harry Edwards and Rhett Bazo developing down the other end. That gives them great bone structure going forward. They've still got to find a ruckman who supersedes Nick Natanui in 1 to 2 years. I think they'll have another crack at Tim English in a couple of years' time. Maybe they're still having a crack at Luke Jackson now.
Well, 1 to 2 years. So Nick Nat has signed a 2-year deal. I was surprised by that.
I think Nick's current state, you sign him for a year and then you reassess at the end of that year. And if Nick's going well, he gets another year. And if he's shot, then
So is there an element of marketing and merchandising behind this?
Can't be. I mean, not for West Coast. West Coast, as we've discussed earlier in the show, they have 102,000 members. With West Coast, it's a matter of, is your operating surplus 8 million or 15 million? So a list management decision as critical as the Nick Natanui decision can't be made based on that.
Or are they that confident they'll get Tim English in 2 years, they just stretch it to 2 years and just make do, knowing that it's going to be a bit of a battle the next couple of years?
If I'd have signed Nick Natanui for a year, you might have been in a better position to go to someone like Lloyd Meek and say,
well,
he's only going to be there for a year and then you're the lead ruckman.
Well, it jumps out at me, his name, the Eagles, which tends to get me thinking, if they're not into him, I think Tim English is coming back.
So what I'm hearing about Lloyd Meek is if Luke Jackson comes, very likely Lloyd Meek ends up at somewhere like GWS.
Well, he'll be going somewhere because he won't be playing for Freo. And he would be a walk-up start as the number one ruckman.
And don't forget that West Coast has three – well, if Rioli goes, West Coast will probably have three second-round draft picks. So Lloyd Meek, second-round draft pick to Fremantle. Fremantle don't have a second-round draft pick in this draft. I suspect that pick gets that deal done.
Lloyd Meek
for a second rounder, yeah.
To West Coast?
Yeah.
You think we'll go for him?
No, I'm saying that hypothetically speaking, if they were leaning in that direction, I think a second round draft pick for Lloyd Meek would get that deal done.
Now, Duff, a couple you will enjoy. One from Peter. Hi, Sluggers. I like supporting the underdog. Quarters KO in the first round. Yes. Thank you, Peter. He goes on, and before I go on, we'll get to that next. I am amused by Gill's stance on a day grand final, yet five of the seven finals will be at night, assuming one of the prelims will be on Saturday afternoon. If it's a Saturday night, then it's 6 out of 7. Perth GF was epic and should be a night grand final. P.S. Does the new broadcast deal improve a chance of a night grand final? Absolutely it does. The commentary from Channel 7 during the week when it was announced was, that's up to the AFL, but we would love it to be sooner rather than later. I think it'll be sooner rather than later.
You know where we're headed? We're headed for twilight grand final.
Yeah.
That's where we're headed.
So you're finishing at night. You're starting in twilight. It'll be a great spectacle. I think I was anti it at the start, but I've come round. I think the spectacle's too good, and I think the great template, the very best of the templates was last year.
Yep.
Shows you how good it could be. Just on the boxing theme still from Matt from Adderdale. Hello, gents. Big fan of the pod. Just want to know who you think would win a fight between Duff and Quarters versus Duck and Oz.
Versus Duck and Oz. Duck and Oz are a bit younger.
P.S. I know for a fact Duck's fighting move is to lay down and play dead. So we just want to point you out, Duff and I are lovers, not fighters.
We don't condone violence.
No, we don't. We don't. We don't do that. Sam from Lathlane, always love listening to your points of view, and they provide some interesting conversations in the house with my Eagle self and one-eyed Docker wife. With regards to Rioli, do you think the Eagles would be interested in bundling him up and a pick? Ports 26 or Eagles 20 for Georgiades. He fills the void for JK and hits the age demographic that they lack. I just don't know what his trade value is. And he just goes on to say about the topics in last week's pod, I would take Sarong every day of the week. We had that debate about Sarong or Brayshaw, of course. And Duff, conference is a terrible idea. I think we just need to look at 29 in AFLW ladders to see how it can go wrong, and we wouldn't have a finals round like we have just seen. Duff, do you think there's any chance of releasing Georgiades?
No.
Yeah, I don't either.
You know, if I'm Port Adelaide and West Coast says you don't get Junior Rioli if we don't get Mitch Georgiades.
Okay.
You go, okay, we'll just keep Mitch. And you can have a disenchanted Junior Rioli, goes back to your club, turns up in whatever shape he turns up in, and you can pay him four times $600,000 a year, which I'm told that's pretty close to the offer. Now,
offer I think... from Port?
Yeah, I think this is opportunity for West Coast, and I think West Coast needs to... They don't have to swallow their pride. Just see the rainbow and look at what is
so a pick in the 20s, and perhaps that's why they've offered him unders.
He's not settled. He hasn't resettled back in Perth. He's got issues off the field. His on field has been hit and miss. He's kicked 14 goals in 14 games, for goodness sake. He hasn't been a great two-way running player. He hasn't been a great pressure forward this year. We all know the talent. But he's now 27. He'll be 28 next year. The Riolis don't play a lot of good footy after 28. I think if Port wants to commit the 4 years to get him, let him. And take the pick that's on offer, because I think there is stuff to be gained here for West Coast.
Hi, Duff and Quarters. Love the show. Bit of talk this year from fans and some commentators like Matthew Pavlich and even Duff at the start of the year about moving Heath Chapman or Hayden Young to the midfield in the future. Could Fremantle become a better side if either player moved on ball? In my mind, I feel like the commentary underestimates what a halfback who can win intercepts and launch counter-attacks can bring to a top-tier side, like Shannon Hearn or Bakahuli Cole from Northlake. What a terrific game it was. Good game from Chapman, by the way. Very good game. But Hayden Young really stood out to me last week, as he has all year.
So Hayden Young stays put for me. I think he's just too good at what he does. I think he'll be an All-Australian defender within 2 years. And Heath Chapman, I think they're still looking at.
As a midfielder?
So I think Heath Chapman played a little bit of midfield footy as a junior and excelled. Has clearly slotted in beautifully as a defender. But with David Mundy going, Heath Chapman's 193 centimetres tall. So that big-bodied mid... The guy that can run, the guy that can make good decisions, the guy that can use the ball, he would have a lot of appeal there. I don't know that it would happen next year, but I do think over the next 2 or 3 years, watch this space for that one.
Okay. Hey, boys, loving the podcast. Currently travelling Australia with wife and 3 kids from WA. Hope you're having a good time out there. And we get to listen to the pod whenever we get the chance and through our long drives. We appreciate you keeping it family friendly on the most part.
Yes.
Oh, it's always family, family, isn't it? Currently in northwest Queensland at a town called Gregory, and I have a dilemma. How do I watch my beloved Dockers on the Saturday night? Do I enter a hostile rugby-friendly pub and ask them to change channel and put the footy on? Or do I sit in van, watch it on KO, but risk waking up the kids and grey nomads with my sheer volume and uncharacteristic anger? Cheers for the podcast. We love it. P.S. I know I'm ineligible for the cut, but you can send it to my brother in Mandja, who is doing a great job of looking after my dog. Chris Swartz, no fixed address. That's a great email.
Very good.
My suggestion is try the pub, try to get them to switch it from rugby league, pass nicely, and if it doesn't work, revert to the van. Just tell everyone who's camping around you what's about to happen.
Yep.
And I think you should be fine. Who are we going to award it? We've got a few more. Look, we don't have time to read them all out. Oh, the last one I'll answer is, Duff, I should say, from Danny Docker from East Vic Park. Love your pod. Consider myself an unofficial ambassador. Will Peter Bell become the next CEO of North Melbourne?
I think Peter Bell will eventually be an AFL CEO. I don't think he thinks he's quite ready yet. And don't forget, it's one thing to be the footy list manager at Fremantle who are building a team climbing into contention. It's another thing entirely to go to a marginal club and try and balance the books. That would be a massive challenge for Peter Bell. I'm not underestimating Peter Bell and what his capabilities are, but I think Peter would probably like to spend a couple of more years learning under Simon Garlick, finding out a bit more about the business side of footy, and then revisit it.
Wouldn't you want to see the job through here?
Well, there's that too. I think this works in Fremantle's favour on a few fronts. I think there's that legacy piece. They're pushing towards the potential to be the first people to be involved in a premiership at Fremantle. I think that works in their favour a little bit at the moment with retention of staff in particular. Hopefully they can retain a couple of those players that we think that are getting good offers from elsewhere.
Just one final one. I've got to read this one out. This is from Sam. Hey, Duff and Quarters. Love the pod. My absolute favourite each week. I'm from Perth and am moving to Melbourne next week, just in time for the grand final and the summer of cricket. I'm a West Coast supporter, but want to commemorate my Melbourne time by also supporting a Melbourne team. Oh, this is hard. If you had to choose a Melbourne team to support starting now, who would it be and why? Quarters, you have to choose someone other than Hawthorn. Oh, that's hard. Look, I just can't, but I will for the sake of the exercise. It would be probably St Kilda because I have a lot of really close mates over there.
Best nightclub?
Saints Disco, of course. Oh, I actually like St Kilda itself. It's a great place. The Esplanade Hotel and lots of good eateries, and we don't venture down Fitzroy Street too deep, but we just stick around the SB area.
They've cleaned it up, haven't they?
Yeah, they have. They have. It's a fantastic Luna Park, great little area. A lot of my really close mates in Melbourne have just followed them forever, and they just keep going back for more. They've had so many agonising narrow grand final losses, and it's just been a long journey for them. I just love the passion of the St Kilda supporters, and having gone out to Moorabbin a few times back in the day, I just love the whole atmosphere, even though you would sort of wear a bit in your day wearing a Hawthorn jumper at that hostile venue, but yeah, I just love the Saints.
So for me, it would be a choice in two. It would either be North Melbourne or St Kilda. Now, I'll explain different reasons. North Melbourne, I come from Darkin. There's about 200 people in the town. We had the smallest football club in that competition, the Upper Great Southern competition, for a long time. For a long time, we punched above our weight, and then we eventually just ran out of people, ended up having to merge with Wagen. I identify with underdog teams and small teams and small clubs, so therefore North Melbourne would be a strong contender. St Kilda, I just love the personality of the club, if you like. It's slightly shambolic, but it's still got a big personality, and there's potential there. In many ways, I kind of feel like they're a bit like Fremantle before Fremantle started to get their act together. You know, Fremantle, there was this giant undercurrent of support there just waiting to be harnessed, and I suspect that that St Kilda could be a bit like that. It disappoints me that St Kilda is the most heavily subsidised Melbourne-based club, because St Kilda has the ability to be much more than that, and they need to get themselves together, get themselves organised, and then I think they can be something.
Mm. It's always good going down to Moorabbin or even to the Junction
Oval.
Did
you ever go to Bojangles?
I think I did, yes. There's so many of them, mate. I'm just trying to keep them. My memory's not as what it was.
So for those not familiar, Bojangles was the underworld nightclub in St Kilda. It was where Chopper Reed and the like used to hang out. We never went to Bojangles when I was in Melbourne. We talked about going. We'd be up at the Esplanade. And we said, oh, should we go down to Bojangles?
If I was going there, it was generally the Esplanade.
And we never...
Or the Palace.
Yeah, the Palace was great. There used to be a big band venue at the Palace.
It was great, yeah.
Remember going to see Kids in the Kitchen? Remember Kids in the Kitchen?
I saw Dragon there one night when Mark Hunter was still around, God rest his soul. So, yeah, seen a few good... And Espy's just a great music venue. Anyone going over for Grand Final week, and if you want a bit of experience, a bit of Melbourne, plenty happening around the city, but head down to St Kilda.
There's a pasta bar there. I don't know. Whether, don't even know whether it's still there. I think it was called Leo's.
It is. It's still there.
Leo's.
Yeah.
It was a great
It's
place.
A go-to. I always, my two go-tos in Melbourne is I go down to Lygon Street. Jimmy Watson's is a pub at the end of Lygon Street near Percy's pub.
That's where Percy...
Percy Jones's pub's...
Adrian Gallagher used to drink there.
Yes, everyone used to drink there. And then there's the Jimmy Watson's and also Leo's Spaghetti Bar, its name was, in St Kilda.
Yeah.
In Fitzroy Street. Fantastic.
So I love that place. My go-to's in Melbourne for people who are interested in where to go if you're over there. Pellegrini's up the top end of Bourke Street. It's like a pasta bar. You sit at the bar and eat pasta. And they were
Pellegrini's a wonderful place, yeah.
They were the first espresso machine, I think, in Melbourne, certainly. And the other place is a place in Lygon Street called the Universita.
That's good, yeah.
The Universita with Paul and Giancarlo. Giancarlo has his own brand of coffee now. One of them's a massive Essendon man and one of them's a massive Carlton man. I think Giancarlo is Carlton and I think Paul is Essendon. Great food.
And if you're heading down that way, after lunch, head towards Brunswick Street and duck into a few of those back street pubs in Fitzroy.
Oh, the Labour in Vain. Did you ever drink at the Labour in Vain?
I didn't drink at the Labour in Vain.
The Labour in Vain. They had great names.
Oh, they've all got
the Standard.
The Standard's a great pub. Mate of mine, Mark O'Toole, won't be listening, but if you are, Mark, g'day.
And what's Ross Lyon's pub, which is further up? The Duke of something, I think. Small pub. Nice little
Duke
pub.
The Duke of Defence, perhaps.
No, I don't think so.
On that note.
I'll research that, and I'll come back to you with that on Tuesday.
Who wins the carton? Does Chris Swartz, on his travel around Australia, and his brother, who's mining the dog for him, does he get the cart?
Okay, so we've decided not to let the dozer driver load up too much.
Well, it doesn't mean he can't win again, but just he's won one recently, so it was a great email, mind you. But let's go with Chris Swartz.
Yep.
So, Chris, you need to send your details so your brother can pick it up to this address.
Send your mail to Duff and Quarters at wanews.com.au.
Thank you very much for joining us. Today we have been brought to you by Tab Touch. Those with the touch, you can better your bet. Download Tab Touch today. Please gamble responsibly and please call Gambler's Help on 1800 858 858 if you run into any difficulties. We'll be back on Tuesday and hopefully the Dockers will still be kicking.
If you're a fan of the podcast, why don't you get in touch? Send your thoughts to the Thirsty Camel mailbag at duff and quarters@wanews.com.au. And don't forget to like, subscribe, and of course, tell your mates. Thanks for listening.
This has been the Duff and Quarters podcast on The Game.
You know who? It's unbelievable.